Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey connecting the light. My guest today is Dawn Paul. She's a practicing shamanic healer. She's a spiritual teacher and author of A Healer of Souls, A Helping Hand on Your Journey Through Life. She has a lot of other attributes, but just for the moment, we'll introduce Dawn. Hello, Dawn.
Hi, how are you?
Well, believe it or not, it's going to be unbelievable. I had a stroke about 4 days ago.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes, I thought that would delight you. but believe it or not, it hasn't left me with too many problems, and I should be able to handle a radio program. And I know a lot of my listeners are joining me because they want to hear how I'm getting on. Anyway, I'm glad to have you on the program because we've got plenty to talk about. I've heard some of your videos. I've read a bit about you just to get prepared.
So,
by the sound of it, you are not surprised that you're a shamanic healer, but how did it start out for you?
Well, badly, I think, because... I suppose I always knew I was supposed to be doing something, but didn't know what it was. So I had, you know, lots of different jobs. I was in nursing. I was in finance for 20 years. But it was just, it felt like pretending. And all the while, there was like a finger prodding me in the back, you know, trying to get me to find, I suppose, what it was. And I just couldn't find it. And I spent about 20 years on a massive spiritual search. I read thousands of books, did courses, and it was just like, no, this isn't right, this isn't right. And finally gave up, very angry, you know, threw all the crystals out and the books out and the coursework out, and went on holiday to Peru. And while I was there, I received a vision at Machu Picchu, which told me to follow the path of the shaman, basically, which I did.
Oh, right. But I believe when you did follow the path of a shaman, you weren't unduly surprised. I mean, I think you knew that you had been preparing for it. Would that be a reasonable assumption?
Yeah. When I realised, because effectively I saw like a shiny Inca in golden armour, and it was very scary. I was really frightened, and cause I didn't know what to do, what it was, and his arm just shot out and pointed at me, and he said, "You will follow this path, and we will help you." And I was like, ooh. And as I walked away from him down the steps, down the side of Machu Picchu, a stone went into the soft part of my foot, and then I thought, well, hang on a minute, I've got hiking boots on, and when I looked down, I had just black pieces of leather wrapped around like booties, like Inca booties, and I think it was a sign that I had been there before. And also lots of things in my life made more sense, you know. I spent a long time thinking, why are things so hard? Why is this happening to me, you know?
Well, in the end, really, in a manner in which you least expected it, you found what you were looking for.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it did pose, you know, a few problems because, of course, I needed time off to train and everything, and had a good job. I'd spent years studying. I was on six-figure salary, and I asked for some unpaid leave, and I was told, you know, no. And I ended up, you know, resigning because I just felt like I didn't really... And it took me 2 years to find out actually what had happened to me on Machu Picchu, but I just figured out that, well, it must have taken them a lot of effort to appear to me, so I'm going to take it seriously.
Yeah. So originally you went to Machu Picchu for a holiday, and then you found out you were a healer and you had a job to do.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. and it's been 9 years now. And
is it?
I work, after 6 months I was working worldwide, and I have been so busy. I never really advertised. People just, you know, come find me, and it's great, you know, I had a career client today in Korea, and it's just so handy that, you know, this work is non-local and can help everybody everywhere, really. But it's very fulfilling work because I'm a little bit impatient myself. It's not a good quality, but it's the way I am. And I really think that, you know, life's for living, life's about joy, and we all have stuff that happens to us, and let's sort it out and then move forward, you know, rather than, you know, it going on and us dragging our emotional baggage with us throughout the rest of our lives, which, you know, a lot of people do. And I think some people don't realise that they can leave it behind and be free then to pursue the life of their dreams.
Right, yes. Now, you've obviously done quite a lot of work since you took that step forward and found out what your real purpose in life was, because I believe you're... let me see, you practice theta healing, you're in emotional freedom, you use emotional freedom techniques for healing, depression without drugs, yeah. You handle IBS, spastic colon. You've got quite a range of qualities. So
well,
how did you pick all of them up?
The handy thing about shamanic healing is that it helps everything, basically. I've not come across anything that basically is not helped. I tend to specialize in childhood sexual abuse in men and women, because abuse and trauma affects us on all levels of our being. Shamanic healing's wonderful for that, because it addresses healing on all of those levels. And of course, the things like, you know, the EFT coaching, spiritual teaching, helping to not only to heal the events, but help people to understand why these things happened and to get the greater overview on their lives, if you like, is very helpful. And I think that it's, you know, the whole package rather than a part of the package.
Indeed. So do you spend a lot of time abroad, or do you actually work from the UK?
I work from home in the UK, so some people come and see me face-to-face. But I can work over the telephone, and it's just the same as a face-to-face session. All shamanic healing happens in another dimension.
Yes.
So whether you're physically in the room with me or in Australia, the healing's happening somewhere else anyway. So it doesn't actually matter where the client is or where I am.
No, right, I see. So,
Does it make sense?
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes.
Good.
Yes. I mean, you can work by phone sessions, and you don't actually need to be with the person involved.
No, because even if you are next to the person involved, the healing's still happening somewhere else. So it really makes no difference at all. In fact, I think personally that most people on the phone are more relaxed because they're in their own environment, they've not had to travel, etc. So, yes, but it's very useful for me because, of course, I've got a very large market.
Yes. So let me just get this straight then. So you've only acknowledged your skills as a shamanic healer for the last 9 years. Would that be correct?
Yeah.
So how many years before that were you being prepared then?
Well, I think I would say from birth, actually.
Really?
And then I would say, and then previously to that, I think it's run through, you know, many other lifetimes. And, you know, I think it's quite interesting, shamanic healing, because I thought people would have quite an odd reaction to it. You know, particularly in the UK, people in America tend to be more open to things, but I thought people in the UK are not going to take to it at all. And nobody's ever asked me about it. Nobody ever asked questions about it. People just come with their stuff and they want to be better. And
yes,
that's what we do. It doesn't matter if they understand it, know about it, you know, care about it, believe in it. It just helps them, and instinctively they seem to know that. And And children really like it as well. You know, children really get into it in a big, big way, which is great. Because I help a lot of children, you know, with stress problems, bullying problems, emotional issues. So it's lovely to do the work with them and babies. And, you know, much older people. I've had people in the late 80s as clients as well. So kind of it's, because it's not a religion, you know, it works for every race, every religion, no religion. It's just there as a kind of a base to everything else. So wonderful. Wonderful.
Yes. So now, you say in one of your articles that where you were talking about souls, that we receive what we believe to be confirmed from the universe, that we are indeed what we believe ourselves to be. We forget that everything that happened to us is actually designed by our higher selves to teach us lessons we choose to learn in this lifetime, and indeed identify with our wounds, our pain and our trauma. Is that something that you base your sort of healing on?
Well, I suppose I'm a little different because I've, you know, always been very interested in the spiritual side of life and the spiritual laws. And so I'm kind of a mixture between a spiritual teacher and a shamanic healer. But on the larger spiritual viewpoint is that, you know, we are here as souls and like everything else looking to evolve. So before we incarnate, we decide what this lifetime is going to be about and what it is that we want to learn. And if you imagine that we kind of give scripts out to the main people in our lives, because we do choose our parents and the people in our lives,
yes,
to give us the experiences that we want so that we may get the learning that we want and have the evolution,
right,
and the progression. So, but what happens is when we incarnate, we forget, our memory gets wiped. We forget that we've handed all this stuff out and what we're going to do. And we can often find ourselves in very difficult lifetimes. And with that forgetting, we step into victimhood. And then we end up in a spiral of victimhood. So
yes,
it's about remembering, reminding somebody, yes, but what was it that you would have wanted to learn from this lifetime? And when you can get the lesson, you can drop the victimhood, because there really isn't anything to be a victim about, because it's all set up by us. And the mistake, yes, a lot of people make is they go, oh, you know, God hates me, God's punishing me. God's just observing us, you know, from a distance and seeing what we're going to do with the free will that we've been given, hoping that we're going to make our lights bright and therefore make his light brighter.
Yes.
Or the divine, or whatever you want to call it, or him or her. And so that's really what's going on. And sometimes we just need to be reminded of that. People say, oh, I'm not a spiritual person, but we are spirits having human experiences, not humans having spiritual experiences, and there's a big difference. So if we can work out, well, maybe what was it I wanted to learn as a soul? Maybe it was forgiveness, maybe it was unconditional love, etc. Then it all kind of makes more sense, and I think that's what people need as well.
And I would also think once you see it from that point of view, it also becomes a lot easier to bear as well.
Well, absolutely. Because it isn't that I'm being punished. I mean, I'm sure a gentleman won't mind him, mind me sharing a story, but he was in a past life gang raped. And we met today his rapists, and they said, you know, they apologized, but they said, you know, but it was scripted. It was, you know, we did it because you needed to go on this massive journey and you needed to learn these things. And he actually said to them, you know, thank you for helping me on my journey.
Yes.
Which is a massive thing, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But when you know why you're doing it, it becomes a task that I guess you take on more readily and without any complaint, because you know that everything that's happening is in your own interests and your evolution.
Even if it doesn't seem like it. So I know you probably wouldn't have had time to read the book, but in the book there's my favourite saying, which is, everything is in divine and perfect order, always.
Yes.
Always.
Some people would, of course, find that very hard to believe when they've had a very rough life, but of course you're correct, yes.
Absolutely, you know, but the point is well, why, and what are you learning from it? And there is always a gift, you know, in things, and we've all had, you know, we all have crosses to bear, and they all are different, and they look different, and maybe some aren't visible, but everyone, you know, has their struggles. Everybody has that wounded child inside of them. You know, everybody's parents affect them in different ways, good or bad. And so it's just about, you know, when you know, if you just say whatever happens, everything that happens is in divine and perfect order, so there must be good reason for this to happen. You know, and sometimes, you know, say for example, you know, we're ill, we have a cancer, well, that can bring about massive healing, massive life changes, massive understanding, and often puts people on a spiritual path, which is the point sometimes.
Yes.
You know, or it can be to change their lifestyle, or maybe they were very materialistic before and now they're looking at, you know, the compassion and love and all the different qualities in life. So everything is for our growth and our learning. And really, there is nothing to fear because we are eternal beings.
So when you see people with problems and you know the facts as you've just spoken them to me, I mean, you realise that everything happens with a purpose. Do you always have to make that clear to people when you're trying to help them?
To be honest, no, because some people have figured it out themselves. I remember seeing one lady, and she'd been severely abused by her mother as a child. I mean, it was, you know, terrible things. And I thought, God, how am I going to say to her, you know, well, remember that we choose our parents, so why would you have chosen her? And I thought she was going to go mad and say, are you joking, you know? And she said, oh, I know. She said, I remember choosing them. I remember being given the choice, knowing exactly what was in front of me.
Really?
I had the option of a very nice couple or the parents that I had, and I chose them because I knew that, no, I'm going to make this lifetime count. Because I think, you know, the idea is that we stop this cycle of life and death and life and death and life and death by having all of the experiences that we need to have in order to keep having to come back.
Indeed, yes.
So we can be in those upper realms.
But of course, I guess it's true to say the majority of people haven't got the slightest idea that what is happening to them is sort of preordained.
Or they think it's happening, you know, being punished by God, by karma, by this, by that. But, you know, it is tough. And, I have not had what I call a silver spoon lifetime. I've had, you know, a lot of issues, a lot of sadnesses and grief. And, you know, and it's very easy. I mean, I had, you know, a drink problem in my 20s. It's very easy to do the poor me's. And to go, oh, I'm going to have a drink now and drown my sorrows and surround ourselves by similarly negative people. But, you know, for example, what happened to me was I went through the menopause at 13.
Did you? Yeah.
Which, you know, so it's like, well, you kind of go, well, why? Why would I go through the menopause at 13? And it did put me on the spiritual path because I was trying to find, you know, answers. And when I was 13, that's quite a long time ago now. You know, it was, I just like, why me? Why has this happened to me? I just only wanted children and to be married and to be a good mother. That's all I wanted. I had no other ambitions whatsoever. Now I can look back and go, well, my body was trying to tell me that is not going to be your life. Mm. The life that you think you're going to have, and you've been conditioned to think you're going to have, because my parents were, well, don't bother doing anything, you're just going to get married and have kids, don't bother with university or anything like that, was not the life that my soul intended me to have. And also, a woman can't be a shaman, apparently, until she's gone through the menopause.
All right.
Well, I didn't know that.
I'm sure I didn't know.
Which is what, this is why I'm saying, you know, it did make sense, you know, further down the road when I look back and I go, oh.
Yes, you were being set up for it right from the word go.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, the shamanic path is a path of power, and therefore you were really tested. I mean, I've been tested until I thought I couldn't take any more, and then I've been pushed another, you know, 500 yards down the road. But it's all perfect.
Yeah? Absolutely, yes.
And I love the Buddhist teachings, and the Buddha says, you know, nothing can affect your internal state. If you decide that you're going to be happy, nothing external from you can change that state unless you allow it. And there's always a moment, a split second, where something comes and hits us. And at that point, we have two ways of reacting to it. We can fall over or go into drama and fear and, oh, no, and why me? Or we can go, interesting, but we kind of stay standing.
Yes, I can certainly see that to be the case. Now, is the object of working with people to bring people in harmony with the earth, is that part of your objective?
In a way, I mean, obviously, I'm working to heal the earth, and everything is what's called projection. And I think you might know the Gandhi quote that, you know, we must be the change we want to see in the world.
Yes.
So we cannot heal the earth. The earth is a representation of where we are currently as a community, if you like. So we can't heal the earth unless we are healed. So by me trying to assist people, because obviously it's their healing path, they're having to do the healing, I'm just a facilitator, then indirectly that's helping the earth, because maybe when they're happier, they'll be kinder to people, they'll be kinder to animals, they'll be kinder to the earth, they'll think more about the impact that they're having on the world. But really it's about bringing a person into harmony with themselves and their soul. This, you know, this soul retrieval processes that are very, very valuable. And ultimately, you know, once a person's happy and open, then they're in harmony with everything anyway.
Yes, yeah. Now, you're obviously by any other name a healer. So when you are asked to give energy out that helps people who are having sort of bodily problems, maybe within their aura or their chakra system, how do you go about removing negative energy?
We use a chakra system, and we find where the blockage is held in the body. So if it's, you know, fear, that might be held in the solar plexus. Sadness might be held in the heart, for example. Inability to communicate, the throat. So we would find that and then use processes of unblocking that. So we use, I use rattles and fire and smoke and, you know, my energy to remove the blockage so that the chakra can run freely again. And then also using, a shaman always uses journeying techniques in order to retrieve then the lost aspects of self or the qualities of personality, like the happiness, like the person's security, like the person's ability to experience joy. And these things can often get lost throughout life. So we're bringing those qualities back, as well as, you know, what we would call soul parts. So these are parts of us that run away when we have trauma, emotional trauma, physical trauma. And this tends to happen most between the ages of 0 and 10. And then that sets up a repeating pattern for more soul loss. So, for example, a child kind of thinks it's invincible, doesn't it? Leaps off the stairs and all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But then at some moment it will realize that actually I'm not that safe. Oh, my body's hurt, or I'm in hospital, or I fell over, or this person's hurt me, or I'm not in a safe place. And at that moment, bits of them go. Or it could be a car accident, or it could be, you know, when you're older, it could be a terrible divorce, it could be somebody dying. Lots of people will say, I haven't been the same since she died. And it's because they've lost a bit of themselves. And so my job is also to go into what's called the lower world, to retrieve those parts and bring the person back to wholeness. So the way I ask people to look at it is if the body is the skin of an orange and the soul parts are like the segments of the orange, and that's where all the juiciness is, where all the energy is, and yes, the light is. And those are the sections that run away, the segments that run away and go to a safe place. So it's actually a safety mechanism. It's not a very nice example, but it's the best example. If you read about somebody that's been raped, they'll say that it was like they were looking down upon themselves. Yeah?
Yeah, yes.
And so they're looking down upon themselves because they are actually looking down upon themselves because they're not in their body. And then after the event, if you imagine, for ease, let's say they were eight segments, but only 5 segments go back into the body, and 3 run off. So the reason for that is that the person's had too much trauma and they need to be numbed.
Yes.
And often you'll see people and they are in that numb place, but that's the place that they need to be for a while, but of course not forever. So they need to do some healing. They don't want to deal with the full horror of what's happened. So then I would go back and I go and find those other segments of them, and then I go and put them back in the body, in the orange skin. So the goal really is to have all of our segments in our body, all of our soul parts in our body, because that's where they're meant to be.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So that's not necessarily possible to achieve, is it, until a lot of work is done in advance? In other words, in any one lifetime, you just may be on the way to completion. Would that be so,
yeah,
or is there a portion
there can be segments gone from former lives, obviously. Mm. You know, there were the witch trials, for example.
Yes,
lots of people have damaged from that, men and women. A lot of that energy came up last year, particularly. But it can be anything, you know. It can, obviously, people were beheaded, people, you know, were accused of things, all sorts of things. You know, people had illness, people lost people to wars, and so it could be absolutely anything. Anything that's traumatic, we tend to lose a little bit of ourselves, and you know, those bits need to be healed, and then they need to be back, you know, within us. And I also do a lot of past life work because that really affects us. So there's so many things really that can affect us. And it's just a case of, you know, healing those things. And then we're able to go and move on with our lives and work on our journey and experience, you know, joy and happiness. Because we all deserve that.
Is it difficult to deal with previous life problems, say like your ancestors' energy that you've picked up and brought with you?
Not really, no. I mean, it's probably easier to deal with the aspects of the self. But I had a client this week who had, what did she have? A massive weight of responsibility. and everything had to be perfect, and everything had to be done immediately, and her needs came last. And I thought, you know, we were just working with her, but then I saw all of these faces of her ancestors, and she said, oh no, it's gone all the way down the, you know, my father's family. And then she'd inherited it. So we had to tell the ancestors, you know, we don't need this anymore. We don't have to live like this anymore. You know, we're good enough as it is. And they all, I think they burnt it all together. And I could see the ancestors' faces. You know, they were very long and grey and dour. And as this energy burnt away, they all lifted and they all started singing and dancing. Yeah. So we do carry things, you know, in our DNA from our ancestors, and we are processing that sometimes as well. So, as I say, there's lots and lots of things that affect us, but this is why I like the shamanic healing, is because pretty much it deals with every aspect of a person.
Mm. It's quite a challenge then, isn't it? It sounds to me as though it's extremely difficult to get right down to clear it all.
Yeah, but that's why we're here. Mm. You know, we're here to do our healing work, to grow, develop, to learn, to evolve. So, and then ultimately to experience joy and to be close to divinity, whatever that is for us. So, yes, it is a job, but we have, you know, hundreds of lifetimes, maybe thousands of lifetimes, you know, to do it in.
Sounds extremely difficult, doesn't it? I mean, as individuals, I suppose we can't be expected to identify our problems, but we come into life with a plan to deal with them. So I suppose we take on what we can handle. Would that be true, generally speaking?
Well, I think that we're never given any more. I remember reading, you know, when I was struggling a lot, that we're never given more than we can handle. And I was like, well, I've had way more than I can handle. But, of course, you just keep going and you keep going. And one of the things is that it helps you to see, oh, my God, you know, how capable we are, really. And we are amazing. People are amazing. Bodies are amazing, you know, but ultimately it's, you know, if things are going well, then of course you don't need to address these things. But if we have a stumbling block in, you know, relationships, in our careers, in our friendships, you know, our relationships with our families, then often, you know, this is a sign that, you know, something needs to be done. Or even, you know, a lot of people, some people have everything. You know, on paper they have maybe a lovely husband, a lovely house, a lovely child, a lovely dog, a lovely cat, a lovely garden, a lovely job, but they're deeply, deeply unhappy.
Yes.
And yes, they go, you know, I shouldn't be unhappy, but I am. And sometimes, you know, that can be a past life thing that they've brought into this life. And it's just a case of getting it healed, and then they can go on and, you know, live their lives and enjoy their lives.
And of course, I guess inevitably for most people, there's always a second person very closely involved in their life, where two people come in together, perhaps for karmic reasons. So you've not only got to cope with your own sort of karma, you're really coping with someone else's as well.
Yes. Yeah. And it's, you know, that's where things can, people often say, oh, I'm fine, and then they get into a relationship and it brings loads of stuff up for them. Mm. So maybe there's, in this lifetime, there's been a relationship that hasn't gone so well, and now you're thinking, oh, well, you know, he may cheat on me, he may do this or she may do that. Or maybe there was a past life where, you know, the husband died and you're overprotective now and you're worried now and you're where is he all the time, you know. So it's just a case of, you know, I think relationships do accelerate our development and our growth if you allow them to, because they do highlight all sorts of things, you know, shadow aspects, things that really kind of drive us mad about somebody. It's often a reflection of what's going on in us that it has not been accepted.
Mm. So do we
they can, you know, they can be a real blessing.
Yes, indeed.
Even
yeah.
a relationship with a child, you know, the child often carries the shadow aspects of the parent.
Oh, yes.
Which is why there can be an awful lot of antagonism between the parent and the child, and I deal with that as well. I was dealing with that yesterday, and it's about, you know, helping the parent to heal, helping the parent to understand the child, and what aspect of the child is reflected in themselves that they are unwilling to accept. So there's kind of a lot to it. You know, it's actually quite a hard subject to, you know, to explain. But, you know, the good news is that, you know, most things are kind of doable. And, you know, some people come and they have, you know, what seems like small things, you know, but to them they're big things. And some people think come with massive things. And it doesn't matter, you know, if there's an issue, you can get it sorted out. And you can move on, and that's the whole point. You know, deal with it, heal it, move on, and get that life of your dreams. You know, get doing what you want to be doing. Because that is why we're here, to make our light brighter.
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. Now, would you say that you need to bring back your full personality, thereby awakening to the inner being?
Well, one of the themes of this year has been people being in integrity with themselves. So a lot of people become false selves, maybe because they think that if they're this sort of person, maybe a funny person, then people will like them, people will love them. Or people become people pleasers, you know. So they're constantly changing themselves to try and make other people happy. And really, that is a road to nowhere. You know, gentleman I spoke to today, he was just, I am exhausted by being this high energy, funny, witty, fantastic person that people believe that I am. He's actually physically ill, very ill with it. Yet his fear was, well, if I stop being this false person that I've made myself to be, maybe then people won't like me anymore, or maybe I won't be so successful. But really, you know, the spiritual journey, as I say in the book, is an internal one. It's not an external one. And this is a mistake that I made. I was reading the books, and books and books and books, and courses, and looking out there, you know?
Yes.
Maybe if I spent more time looking in here, and I did do 8 years of meditation, but you know, then I would have found it more readily. So it's being more of who we are, the fullest expression of who we are. And of course, if you go through all the layers of conditioning and trauma and all of those sorts of things, you know, inside all of us is that light of the divine. And that is our fullest expression. So being that, getting rid of all of the ego struggles, oh, what about this, and I better not do that, and the fears, and what do I look like, and I wish my bum wasn't big, and oh, he's better than I am, and all of those things, you have to quieten the mind down and live from the heart center.
Yeah.
And then things do become easy.
Would you say that what we're really aiming to do each lifetime is to raise our consciousness levels and literally sort of wake up? Would you say that was an ongoing process?
Yes, I would. I mean, that is the goal of the soul. Whether or not it occurs in this lifetime, you know, it may be that we know we try, we fail, and it's easier to go down a naughty route. So not judging, but you know, I had somebody who was a client who was a murderer.
Wow.
And it was, you know, he'd been in prison 8 times, I think. And you know, I didn't want to judge, but I couldn't get my head around it. And then he told me the story of his childhood, and it was so horrendous. It was the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. And he said the only safe place then to go was a gang, because a gang was actually your family.
Yes.
And he worked his way up through the gang, and he became a gang leader. This is many, many years ago now. And but then, of course, it's all about saving face in order to maintain your position and having to be this hard case, because actually you do want the love and the respect of what is now your family, i.e. the gang. But things went very wrong, and somebody died, and he then was like, right, I've killed somebody. Now God will hate me, so therefore I'm lost. So I might as well carry on, because now I've done this, that's it, game over. Do you see my point? Rather than, well, okay, you know, this has happened, but knowing that he is forgiven, we're given free will, but knowing this does not have to be now the downward slope, and more and more bad things. So ultimately, yes, you know, it is about the, all about the evolution of our soul, all about, you know, the highest expression of divinity, which does not mean going around blessing everybody, being nicey-nicey. It just means being ourselves.
Yes, yeah.
You know, being compassionate for ourselves, for others, the planet, etc., etc., etc. But sometimes people can go down a road. I have a friend that was Catholic, and she got divorced, fell in love with somebody else, got divorced, left her children, and she said, you know, I can't pray anymore. I said, why can't you pray anymore? She said, I'm divorced. I'm a sinner. And I was like, oh my God. You know, so people make up these beliefs and then they separate themselves off from source energy. Oh, you know, he won't be talking to me because I've done this. I did it. When I found out I couldn't have children, I was furious. I was like, I am never speaking to you again. You know, you've disappointed me. I hate you. Go away. You know. And, of course, the moment I went back, he was there waiting for me. And, again, I say he, but it's more than it. But, you know, so it's our beliefs that cause an awful lot of our problems.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And that's what I help people with, our assumptions. You know, for example, you know, the mother could be a terrible mother, and the child will go, oh, I am unlovable. That's what's going on here. She's, like, saying these things to me. It must be because I am unlovable. And we think with a child's brain. And unfortunately, that thinking carries on. You know? We're still thinking with that child's brain. At 45, my mother didn't love me. I am unlovable. Yes, yeah. You know? Rather than, you know, my mother had issues. She couldn't maybe show her love to me. Or maybe she didn't love me, but that's her problem. Maybe she had a cold heart. Maybe she'd had to cut herself off from her emotions.
Mm.
Rather than, there's something wrong with me. So a lot of the time with healing, it's about looking at the same situation, but from a different vantage point with different understanding. And as you say, then the realizations come in, and then the understanding can come in, and the person can move forward.
Yeah. Well, I think it helps a lot if people understand that there is no such thing as death, and they have a whole series of lives in which to, shall we say, put things right and progress spiritually. If you thought there was only one life, there wouldn't seem to be much purpose to it, really, would there?
No. Well, I've never understood that, and that was my parents' belief, that there was just one life. And I was just, at three, I was like, no, 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 no. I knew that this wasn't reality, and I knew that there wasn't only one life. I knew it every cell of my being. And I actually died when I was seven.
Did you?
I died on the operating table, and after a few minutes, seconds, I don't know how long it was, but I watched the whole operation from well, it's like my eyeballs were up on the ceiling of the theatre.
Yeah.
And it took me ages. I was just like, oh, what's going on down there? Oh, nurses, doctors, somebody's on the table. Yeah. It took me ages to realise it was me.
Yeah.
And when I did realise it was me, it was completely, almost just sort of like interested.
Yeah.
Not, no, oh my God, that's me, you know. It was like, oh, hmm.
That's
what's
the funny.
Now? Oh, they're all running. You know?
That's the funny aspect of it, isn't it? That you can be watching something happening to your body and it really feels as though it doesn't belong to you because you don't take a lot of interest in it.
No, I was completely, you know, disinterested. It was just like, oh, okay, just like watching and, you know, so they're all panicking a bit, they're all running around and what's happening. And when I came round, obviously, you know, whatever happened, and back in my body, but when I came round, I said to the doctor, oh, why did you do this to me? Why did you do that to me? And he went white as a sheet and ran off the ward. As if to say, well, how could you have known that? You know, oh. I watched the whole thing.
Well, he must have been shocked.
I guess so. But, you know, I was like, oh, I don't think that's right. I mean, dangled me upside down and did all sorts of things to me. And, you know, so... But, you know, we are not these bodies, and a lot of the fears come in, you know, the ego mind that comes as part of the human body, which is fears, and it's responsible for looking after the physical vehicle, the body, and it regulates an awful lot of things, you know, temperature and hormones and hair growth and all this sort of thing. So it's not something that we can do without. It keeps us breathing if we're unconscious, for example. Mm-hmm. But when we over-identify with it and we start to listen to it, like, oh, I wouldn't go out if I were you, you know, you never know what might happen, and oh, I wouldn't try and get that job if I were you because it's just going to laugh at you, and, you know, all of this negative chatter, we listen to it, and it gives it more and more power. And until in the end, it's like a big hand, you know, playing us like we're a string puppet. And the idea is that, you know, what we have to do is to recognize the place of the ego, which is to be the slave.
Yes.
And for us to be the master. So we have to master, the biggest part of healing is to try and master our emotions, master our thoughts. And if they're all negative and fear-based, we know that they're the ego mind, and we bring ourselves to that heart consciousness, which is our higher self.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's part of us that knows it's eternal, that it doesn't really matter if you die anyway, because you're probably back soon. And I've seen a lot of people, you know, distraught that their partner has died, a family member's died, and we've done some work to meet this person, and they said, look, you know, I came in to learn something and I learned it, so I didn't need to be around anymore.
Mm. So right, now, just to change the subject slightly, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Just to change the subject slightly.
Yeah.
I believe as a shamanic healer, a significant part of your work would involve soul retrieval. Have you ever been involved in that?
Soul retrieval?
Hmm.
Yes. I've just, that's what I was talking about with the segments that leave. Yeah, so they're the soul parts, so we have soul loss, and then I have to go as a shamanic healer and retrieve the lost soul parts, and that's called soul retrieval.
Yeah.
So, yes, do that. Spend most of my day doing that.
Do you? Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't it that rather, what would I say, an unpleasant experience?
Why would it be unpleasant?
I don't know.
Because the parts go to the lower world, yes?
Well, some would, I guess.
Hmm. Yeah. Generally, most of them do. But what you have to remember is that the lower world is just a world that's lower.
Mm.
And there's this world, which is a middle world, and then there's an upper world. But they're just worlds.
Yes.
They're realms of consciousness, actually. So it's just a world. It's just has trees in it, plants in it, rivers in it, adventures in it, beauty in it, darkness in it. The level below, the unconscious realm, can be a little bit darker, but it's not, you know, it's not a hell. There is no hell. I think, you know, the Native American Indians have always, you know, been so amazed that we would say that hell was within their Mother Earth, which is a thing of beauty. They're like, no, it's not, you know. So, no, it's not unpleasant work at all. And for the client, it's very, very valuable work, because you're bringing back, if you imagine the orange segment, it's not only got their energy, but it's also got their aspects of personality that have been gone. So for whatever reason, whatever trauma, that part has gone. So, for example, if it's gone, you know, when they were children, then they might be now in a situation where they don't know how to play with their children. And they don't know how to play because that part went when they were a child.
Yeah.
So when you bring that back, all of a sudden, oh, I can play with my children and I've got a better relationship with my children, because that child part of them is back, or their innocence, or whatever it is. So it's, you know, it's beautiful work. It's not something that that I, you know, fear. I mean, obviously, you don't fear things as a shaman anyway, because we see everything as part of a natural world. Yes. And the beauty about shamanism is the belief that everything has, you know, everything has divinity in it. So, you know, a blossom, a stream, a jaguar, a tree, a rock, everything also has a consciousness. So the shaman in the jungle would, you know, go to this, meet the spirit of the tree and say, you know, what can you do for my community? And the tree will tell it directly, well, my bark will do this, my leaves will do this, my sap will kill parasites in the stomach. And now the scientists have said to the shaman in the jungle, you know, well, how did you know this? Because it's, you know, been proven to be right. And they go, well, the tree told me. Plants told me. And this is the beauty of the natural world, and it's available to all of us, but we're so cut off from it, you know, particularly now with all these iPads and iPods and computers and phones and games and streaming films, and, you know, we're more inside, we're more isolated, and we're losing the connection with the earth, and the earth itself has a healing vibration called the Schumann resonance, and just going out and lying on a blanket can heal you. Lying on a blanket on the earth and breathing in the sunshine is immensely healing.
Yes. Sounds very nice. So how does soul loss manifest itself then?
Generally the person feels kind of, is aware of it. It just feels that there is something missing, or they could have continual problems in getting to a certain place in life, or an illness, for example, a numbness, an inability to manifest what they want, and just feeling, you know, kind of not really all here.
Yeah.
So it's very common, actually, that I've not really met anybody that hasn't needed soul retrieval, because if we've not had any loss this lifetime, then you can guarantee that we've had it in previous lifetimes.
Yes.
Now, on very rare occasions, a person can raise their own frequency, and these soul parts can naturally come back, but generally somebody has to go and get the parts for you.
I suppose it's first understanding that there are parts that are really lost to you, isn't it?
Well, remember that they're not lost as like a punishment. They're lost for protection. Because the soul is like a fragile thing, like a pane of glass. And the last thing we want is for it to be smashed. So it will run away and keep itself safe rather than stay in a situation. And it, as I said in the, you know, the rape story, then the person, if all of the soul parts came back after that, they wouldn't want to be dealing with it at all. They couldn't deal with it at all. They need to be numb. They need to process what's happened to them. So it is a safety mechanism. Those parts are safe and we can get them back. But, you know, people talk about it in the language. You know, part of me went when she left me. I haven't been the same since. You know, or part of me's died. You know, and people are aware of it on a subconscious level. So it's very important work.
Yes, and I'm surprised to hear you or say or give the impression that you're involved in quite a lot of this soul retrieval.
Well, that's the main part of a shaman's duty.
I never knew that.
Aha! Well, we spend our lives going up and down between the worlds, you see.
Yes.
For information, for healing, for resources. So, you know, my mum will say, you know, where have you been today? I go, oh, just working at home, but I've been here and I've been there. And I've been...
Oh, well. Now, we're coming rapidly to the end of the programme, but is there any aspect of your work that you'd like to mention that I haven't covered so far? And is there anything that's sort of important that you want to mention?
I don't think so. I mean, I've tried to put everything in the book because I'm aware that not everybody can have a session and probably not everybody would want a session necessarily. And ultimately, you know, our healing paths are our own, and a lot can be gained by taking a different viewpoint over what's happened to us in our lives. So that is all in my book, A Healer of Souls. It's written, so there's something in it for everyone. And obviously, if anybody has any questions, I mean, there's, you know, my website and they can get in touch. But generally, I think, you know, we've covered quite a lot today. It's kind of an impossible subject to cover because there's so many aspects to it.
Yes,
but,
indeed.
You know, the main part is that, you know, I think ultimately, particularly for people that have suffered sexual abuse, is, you know, what I would say is there's no shame in it, and there's no problem in talking about it, and that knowing that, you know, you can get healing for it. You know, you don't have to let it burden you. And I think that, you know, of all the things that I do, that's, you know, the most powerful work, I think.
Fine. So where can one get hold of your book?
It's on Amazon and .com and amazon.co.uk and Barnes and Noble.
Right. So has that been out very long?
It's been out since the middle of December.
Middle of?
December just gone.
Oh, was it really? Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. So that's a nice new one. Is there anything else you'd like to mention before we close?
I don't think so off the top of my head. It's been a very interesting chat and you've asked some brilliant questions and I really thank you for inviting me onto the show.
Oh, well, you're very welcome and thank you for coming at relatively short notice. What else is there to say? We haven't given your web address, have we, in case someone wants to follow it up?
Yes, I mean, there are articles on the site and testimonials. It's www.liberate-online.co.uk, or if you just type in Dawn Paul, P-A-U-L, Shaman, then it will come up on the search engines.
Okay, it's probably easier for people to remember other people's names, isn't it, than the website addresses, but that's fine. Yeah. So they can get you through that. Then I think that would cover it, most certainly. So I would thank you very much for coming onto the programme.
It's been a great pleasure. Very nice speaking with you.
The time's gone by so quickly.
It has.
Yeah, it's surprising. It's just over an hour's, well, about an hour's passed. So thank you very much for coming onto the programme.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, friends, next week I have Teresa Proctor. She is the channel of the energies of Mary Magdalene. That is the first Mary Magdalene. And we're going to talk about her work through her. So it's as simple as that, really. She channels her energy, and we're going to talk about how it helps other people. So thank you for being with me today. I hope you enjoyed it, and I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.